on 1116 SEN. The Science of Sport with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Wowza. Good morning, folks. Welcome to the Science of Sport at 7 minutes past 10 o'clock in the home of SEN Studios here in 473 Swan Street, Richmond. Professor Mark Fabreo and me. Yeah, hi, mate.
Hi. I feel a bit funny in this seat.
Yeah. Well, Jackie Ladder is away. The stalwart, the backbone, the life force. She'll be back next week for the last couple of shows. I think we've got three more, including this one. But good to have you back, mate. Where have you been?
I was in a beautiful part of Canada called Banff. It's about 130 kilometres west of Calgary, and it's in the mountains. And I was at a conference on immunometabolism of disease. So basically, what's becoming really obvious in medicine is that your immune system plays a major role in all sorts of diseases, including and most importantly in cancer. So if you can look after your immune system and make sure that the drugs that are used to treat cancer aren't immunosuppressive, then your outlook is a lot better.
So one of the things that I've spoken about a bit, which I'm no Professor Mark Fabreo, I'm just a dumb bloke in a flannel shirt, but psychoneuroimmunology, which talks about the relationship between your emotional and psychological or mental health and the health of your immune system or the function of your immune system. So we know that, for example, if you, everything else being equal, a happier, less stressed, calmer person, then everything else being equal, you'll have a stronger, for want of a better term, immune system. But if you're stressed and if you're anxious and you're always producing cortisol and your sympathetic nervous system's going crazy and you're an overthinker and you don't sleep much, you're going to have a suppressed immune system. So there's also a correlation between what's going on in our head and our physical health as well.
Well, you're actually too self-deprecating, Craig, because what you just said is the words of someone who's quite intelligent, actually. And I say,
well,
that
maybe just someone with a good memory.
No, because I say that because actually a paper came out, I think, 2 weeks ago showing a relationship between stress levels and survival time in blood cancer. So if you are stressed, then yes, you do produce cortisol and it does suppress your immune system. And clearly, particularly with blood cancer, because blood cancer are your immune cells in a lot of respects. So, but I guess the challenge is, I mean, being diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah. And
by the
way,
how are you going to be not stressed?
Yeah.
Oh, it's okay.
Yeah.
It'll look after itself.
It's kind of like that. Look, I don't want you to worry, but.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't want you to panic, but. And I think that's you're exactly right. That's one of the challenges is to, you know, like we talk about stress in our culture all the time and we talk about anxiety and overthinking and all of those things, but it is possibly from a health point of view, it's possibly one of the biggest challenges because when you think about the other thing, the practical things like food, you know, well, you're either going to have a pretty good diet or you're not. Mm. You're either going to drink enough water or not. You're either going to load your body with sugar and stuff or you're not. You're either going to go for a walk or you're not. And it's really comes down in many ways just to a decision. Whereas stress, it's not just a decision.
No.
It's an involuntary response.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So you don't manage it. It manages you.
Correct.
Right? And so that's where you're going, listen, just chill out, which is just like saying, hey, just be 7 feet tall.
Exactly.
It's a stupid thing to say.
You know, I'm really happy that we don't say to people who have mental health issues, oh, just get over it.
Yeah.
You can't say that to somebody because the other thing, as you said, it's involuntary. Like if you think about people who have phobias or people who have, or people who have like claustrophobia or hypochondriasis, these sorts of things.
Or even a basic fear of spiders.
Yeah, they know it's irrational.
Yep.
They can't control
That's right.
Feeling. So
their response is not a choice.
Right. So if you're diagnosed with a scary disease, it's almost, you know, the way that you react to that is going to be part of your personality, your psychological makeup. So if you're very analytical, you'll go, okay, my chances of survival are 20%. Mm. If I really look after myself, put my faith in the doctors, have the best, you know, I'll get through this. Mm. Or you may just go, I'm screwed, you know.
But interesting, when you said faith then, I thought you were going to say something other than doctors, but it's interesting with people who have faith, whether or not we believe in that, or but what it means for some people who have faith in a higher power or, you know, whatever their source of divine inspiration is that for them, because of that belief, they're not as stressed.
I agree, 100%.
So whether or not that is divine intervention or whether that's, you know, psychology 101, which helps them stay more calm, more relaxed in what would be an otherwise very stressful situation, I mean, the reality of that is still there, you know. So that's the thing, is it is one of the biggest challenges, I reckon. Like when we so much talk these days about consciousness and letting go, and, you know, all these metaphors, walk to the edge of your emotional cliff and just let it all go and watch it fall away. And, you know, it's good. But then what really matters is when the SH1T hits the fan.
Yeah.
Is going, yeah, well, that's good. But now I'm in the middle of it.
Yeah, yes. But, I mean, being a scientist, it's, you know, it's difficult to reconcile science and theology. But having said that,
well, not even theology, just belief.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not even talking theologically. Yeah. I'm talking just from a psychology.
Yeah, yeah.
If you believe, like if you believe someone's walking up behind you with a knife, your physiological response will be the same as if someone is walking.
Exactly.
So that's real.
And so my point is, I do not at all ever, I'm never critical of people who have religious faith, because I think it gives people exactly what you're saying, a purpose.
Gives them hope.
And hope, and that's all good.
For sure. All right, so speaking of such things that are, what's the word, post-life, this is a terrible, terrible segue, but well, one of the sad things, I guess, to come out of yesterday, of course, was Paul Couch.
Very sad.
And I'm, you know, I...
And scary in the same way. Well, right around our age, Craig.
Your age, my age, and I'm thinking, man, 51 years old, out on a bike ride, Great Ocean Road, being physical, being active. Somebody said to me yesterday, how can somebody who's like obviously exercising, or how can somebody who's fit have a heart attack? So just give us a snapshot on that. You're listening to Professor Mark Fabreo. Is it possible that someone's fit in inverted commas, but not necessarily healthy?
Well, yes, it is. It's possible. But when somebody passes at that age from cardiovascular disease, usually there is a genetic
component,
underlying genetic component. So that means that you would have a mutation of a gene that's key to the cardiovascular system.
Mm.
And my point is, and I have to speak about personal circumstance here, because I have a family history of cardiovascular disease. So it, folks out there, if you have family history of disease, whatever it is,
i.e. mum or dad have had a heart attack, grandparents.
Mum or dad has, sibling has, not even talking about cardiovascular disease, talking about a disease like
anything,
cancer, chances are you have a genetic predisposition for that disease. Now, that doesn't mean that you should go, I'm done.
Yep.
I'm going to treat my body like a rental car, because there is, you know, when you're talking about genes, you have epigenetic modification, and what that means is that the environment interacts with the gene. So the better you are at living a healthy lifestyle, the less likely that genetic mutation is going to take hold.
Mm.
That's known. Now, people can go and get, you can do this for about $1,000 now. I could take a cheek swab of you today, take it back to Sydney, and sequence your whole genome. And that will then give us...
It makes me excited and nervous at the same time.
Exactly. And I haven't done it yet. I mean, I work at the place and I haven't done it.
Why is that?
Well, because it comes down to this, Craig. It comes down to what we were talking about before.
How funny is that? Do you want to know
and live in fear... Or do you, and I'm a person who is fearful of, right? I'm not a person who'll go, even though I work in science, I'm a person who'll get really worried about it, you know, right? Yeah. So do I want to be really worried or do I want to say, okay, every gene, this is the way I look at it. Mm. What can I do about it? So the thing is, what you can do about it is try and live a healthy lifestyle. So what I try and say is, okay, I have a mutation of every gene. Therefore, I've really got to look after myself.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and get screened. So there are certain diseases that you can get screened for. But the thing is, do I really want to know? Now, some people want to know. Mm. I could then say to you, okay, Craig, you have a mutation of this gene. And
which predisposes you to that.
Which predisposes you to Alzheimer's disease, for example, right? So that means...
Yeah, see, I don't want to know that.
No!
I don't want to know that.
So that means when you're 70 years old, you're probably going to get Alzheimer's. Why worry about it for 20 years?
And every time I can't find the keys, I'm like, is that it? Is it here?
Exactly. So, and that's why I haven't done it yet. But you can do it, and people do it.
I think this is a boy thing more than a girl thing. I would like to listen to guys or girls of our listeners, but... I reckon we are more fearful to know what might happen than women. And I think women are just, for a range of reasons, just more practical and more proactive with this stuff.
Maybe. So, guys, ring up and let us know. Would you want to know your genetic mutations or not?
And if you're going to get something, do you want to know in advance so that you can perhaps, get ready from a practical point of view, whatever that might be, and also, two, obviously manage your lifestyle in the best possible way so that you can delay the onset of that?
But one thing where it is useful, genomic sequencing, is if you have a family history of disease and you... have a child, you can now get the whole genome sequenced of that child.
Mm.
Now, you'll know, the child won't, and then you have a choice of whether to tell the child. No, but the thing is, that's probably important because you know, for example, there was an actress who played in, what was that show that was about Al Bundy? What was that show? Christina Applegate.
Married with Children.
Right, so Christina Applegate, who was the daughter in that.
She got cancer, breast cancer?
No, she didn't. She didn't have breast cancer. What she did is she had a family history and she had a
double mastectomy?
Yes, she had a mutation of the BRCA gene.
You know who else had that done?
Angela Jolie. Right, so if you have a mutation of what's called the BRCA gene, you're... very susceptible to getting breast cancer.
Mm.
So you can have a choice to have a double mastectomy.
Mm.
The other thing is, if you have a mutation of genes involved in melanoma, it's probably useful to know because it means you have to go every year and get your moles checked out because you can get it early. But this is a really...
I go all the time. I go all the time to get my skin checked. And, you know, there's a... there's a bunch of places now. I think the place that I go, it's on Carnegie Road. I'm happy to give them a plug. I think it's called Sunspot. But what they do is, have you ever had it done?
Yeah, I have.
Where they do a photographic map of your body. So something that's the size of a pinhead on a screen in front of you is like huge. As big as your hand.
Yeah.
You're like, well, that's terrifying. But it's really good because all they do is monitor changes. And I've had a bunch of things cut. I've had some basal cell carcinomas cut off me, which haven't been that much fun, but they can evolve into melanoma. So it's certainly a good thing to...
Yeah.
And if you've got it, if you've got something, you've got it. So the earlier that you get it...
I mean, bowel cancer is completely...
Treatable
if you get it early.
Yeah, exactly.
Once it metastasizes, you're in trouble. Metastasizes means it spreads from one area to the... body to the other.
We're going to take Sunspot Skin Cancer Clinic, 1146 Dandenong Road, Carnegie. That's from Jackie, has just brought that up for us. And I'm only saying that because they're very good at what they do. So if you want to get along there, they'll look after you. And no, I'm not sponsored at any stage. When we come back, we're going to talk about taking total responsibility for our health and wellness, and sometimes how we might not do that.
On 1116 SEN, The Science of Sport with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's Home of Sport, The Science of Sport. Jackie Lauder is in absentia today. Professor Mark Fabreo is not. He's in the number one seat, the jump seat. He's got three computer screens in front of him, a keyboard. It's like a kid in a candy store. He's so excited to have stepped up a couple of rungs. And I've got about 37 computer screens on this side, of which I look at none. Of course, we're talking about genetics. We're talking about maximising health and optimising things and looking after ourselves over the long term. But before we jump back into that, Ben in St Kilda wants to talk about something which is quite topical and on the agenda today, which of course is UFC 196. G'day, Ben.
Yeah, good morning, Craig. And folks, Conor McGregor, the most charismatic and dominant athlete on the planet today, is doing things which have revolutionised his sport. They've likened him to Muhammad Ali. And yesterday, Conor McGregor actually said he is not Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali stands on his own. And if he could achieve what Muhammad Ali has done, he'd be a very happy man. So I just wanted to understand from your perspective the steel mind that Conor McGregor has got, where he is so supremely confident that he almost defeats his competitors with his confidence before they even step into the octagon.
Yeah, of course, for those who are a little bit unfamiliar with the UFC, Conor McGregor is an Irish fighter who is he's the number one MMA exponent on the planet right now. So he is the 145 world champion, 145 pound world champion. He stepped up. I think he's fighting Nate Diaz today, and I think he's fighting at 170. Is that right, Ben? Yep. Mike's just giving me the thumbs up, our panel up. So yeah, he's fighting at 170, and he is supremely confident. My only fear for him, and he's an amazing athlete, and he doesn't really have any obvious flaws, but is that when he loses, which he will lose one day, hopefully, well, maybe not today. Nate Diaz might think differently, but we saw when Ronda Rousey, who was kind of almost a female version of him in that unbeatable, super-duper confident trash talker, got beaten, and she just endured a world of online hate. So I think that they will be a little bit more forgiving. The Irish people have got a new national hero, and he has got unbelievable national support for somebody who is in a sport which in our part of the world anyway is not mainstream, although it's growing by the day.
I just want to add just my 20 cents worth.
Sure.
He's obviously a very good athlete. I don't believe he's very charismatic. I think trash talk is easy. The difference, I mean, I heard overnight a grab from him, and he was very, you know, there were a lot of profanities in what he was saying, and that is completely at odds with how Muhammad Ali did it. For example, when they asked Muhammad Ali in his first fight against Sonny Liston, well, you're an overwhelming outsider. And his response was, you want to lose your money, you bet on Sonny. So he was so, how could he do that? Like, he was so charismatic. He was a word wizard. I think Conor McGregor is an awesome athlete. I don't particularly think he's that charismatic, personally.
Hey, Ben, what's your call? What's the result going to be?
Oh, it has to be Conor McGregor in one, because he's Mystic Mac, and every prediction he said before comes true because he holds that pot of gold. And I would just add that Conor McGregor is going to do things in this sport which other people haven't done. He is very charismatic. I would say to the gentleman, maybe jump onto YouTube and have a look at his interview yesterday on CNBC, where he's discussing the financial side of the fight game, and not just a couple of the sound bites where he's using profanity, because he goes into depth a lot of the time without profanity, and that's where the charisma truly shines through.
And while we've got you here, you're our resident UFC expert for the moment. Misha Tate and Holly Holm, what's your call?
Oh, Holly Holm has to kick Misha Tate in the head to replicate what she did to Ronda Rousey. Otherwise, it doesn't seem like it was fair.
All right. Thanks for your call, Ben. UFC 196 today, folks. And the co-main event, Holly Holm and Misha Tate. Holly Holm, of course, was the girl who beat, or the lady who beat, Ronda Rousey convincingly in December here in Melbourne. So time will tell. But there is no sport in the world, Professor Fabreo, that divides people more than MMA.
No, it doesn't. I'm sitting here and I'm sort of participating in a conversation where a caller says that in order to win, one human being has to kick another human being in the head. Mm. That doesn't sit that well with me, I have to say. I'm sorry.
Well, I think that's, I'm with you, and I think that, interestingly, there's not as much, there seems to be not as much damage to the head and to the brain in MMA, because a lot of it is not kicking or punching. A lot of it is grappling and wrestling, sure, and on the ground. And so, whereas boxing is, and I enjoy boxing too, so there's no criticism here, but obviously boxing is all about striking. So time will tell in terms of all of the information that's coming out now about concussion, about all the long-term injuries and all the, I think we discovered a week or two ago on this show that the average lifespan of an NFL player is 18 years less. It was either 16 or 18 years less than the typical lifespan of an American male. Do you want to read some of those SMSs to us?
Just a couple of questions on the SMS. My wife has a BRCA1 gene mutation, and we are not sure whether to get my son checked. I think we should. My wife and I should wait until he's 18. What do you think? I think that's probably a good idea. BRCA1 is a gene mutation you have to, you know, watch out for. Mm. But in a boy, it's probably not as serious as in a girl. So leaving till 18, I think, is wise. How do I get my genome sequenced? Well, you can ask your doctor. If you want to get your genome sequenced, you can ask your GP, and your GP can.
He or she might look at you like, what?
It may be, but it, you can, you know, there are now medical
labs where you can slag into something and send it in the mail.
No. There are actually medico eco tours where people from Asia are coming to Australia as a, you know, group and seeing the Opera House and getting their genome sequenced in the meantime. One really positive was from Stephen from Carrara, who says it would be good to know if you got your genome sequenced and the report came back saying you had nothing wrong with you. That would be good, but that doesn't mean, whoa, I can now treat my body like a rental car.
Sure, you know, it does.
No, it doesn't.
Couchy in Eltham says, Paul is a distant cousin of mine. We were talking about Paul Couch before. Heart disease is definitely prevalent in the men of the family. Several have had heart attacks around that age. So bottom line, folks, control your controllables. Don't overthink the other stuff as hard as that might be, and maximise your genetics. The one thing you can control is what you do to your body and with and for your body.
So, Craig, I want to ask you a question on the back of something we were talking about outside. So if you have an interrupted period in your training, so you have, you know, you've got your best intentions set up and something happens such that either you're stuck at one of your work commitments, or you get an injury, or you get sick and you miss sessions. Mm. How do you cope with that?
For me personally?
Yeah.
Well, that's a reality of my life all the time, because I travel a lot. So it's, for me to get into a rhythm is pretty hard. So I was in Queensland on Thursday and Friday. I'll tell you a funny story actually about training. But what I do is I'll just do stuff in my hotel room. So yeah. I might find something that I can do chins on. So I'll do five sets of chins and five sets of push-ups and run up a few flights of stairs. I'll do something just so that I'm moving my body. Or it might be that I'll even just go for a walk.
Yeah.
I'll literally just, which is, you know, if it's 2 or 3 days, I'm not going backwards. And my 52-year-old body is sometimes giving me a round of applause for giving it a little bit of a break. So mentally and emotionally, I'm all right with that. I didn't used to be. But I think you know, there's a fine line sometimes between, you know, your exercise program and the way that you execute it being healthy in terms of emotionally and psychologically and unhealthy. And, you know, if you were spoken about exercise nervosa or whatever you want to call it, obsessive exercise addiction, where, you know, if you can't exercise or someone gets in the way of your routine or life gets in the way where you have a bit of a meltdown, you know, that's just not a healthy space to be in. So it's trying to find that thing that works for your body and works for your life and works emotionally and mentally as well.
Yeah, because I mean, we talked about, you know, people falling off the fitness wagon, and I think a lot of times people have the best intentions. They sign up for to go to the gym, they're quite enjoying it, and then there's an event which interrupts the routine and then they just stop.
And the event is the catalyst for something.
Yes. So really what we need to do, I guess, and I, you know, if Jackie was here, she could help enormously with this, is learn strategies not to fall off the fitness wagon. So it's kind of like akin to smoking. If you give up smoking and you have one cigarette, most people then lapse into going back to smoking.
That's right. It's not about the cigarette. It's about the cognitive response.
Yeah. And so people have to learn. And I think about this now because I have a bit of an injury and it's...
You're borderline exercise obsessive.
Oh, yeah, I am. I'm not borderline. I'm exercise obsessive,
okay,
right?
Okay. So because you get a bit cranky and grumpy and out of sorts.
I do. Yeah. I mean, when I was married for 20 years and my ex-wife used to say to me, go on exercise, will you, when I was grumpy. Mm. And yes, I am. But now, as I've got older, I've learned that, you know, like you said before, if you have a few days off, your body really says that's a good thing. But what you need to do is have mechanisms to cope with an event such that you just don't fall in a trough and forget about exercise.
Well, I've got answers for you on that.
Well,
remember, I was
great.
A trainer for 30 years. Yeah. So we'll answer that after we chat to Dave in Preston. G'day, Dave.
Hi, good morning, boys. How you going?
Good, thank
good,
you.
Thanks.
What I'm going to ask is, I had an operation on my right hand. I broke the wrist and they cut the bone of the tendon. Now, they reckon when they put the block of the arm at... activated the sympathetic nerve, they couldn't turn it off. Now, every time I used my right hand, it got it angry again. Is there any way, they reckon it's on all the time, is there any way that you can turn it off? It seems to play up when I isolate it.
Okay, so do you get sweaty in that hand?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So one thing that you could think about doing is talking to your doctor about getting a nerve block. If it really is bothering you, because this is having a sympathetic nerve overexpression as you've got in your arm is similar to a syndrome called reflex sympathetic dystrophy, and people who have reflex sympathetic dystrophy, they have pushing on the sympathetic nerve and their arm. Does your arm feel like it's like in a tourniquet sometimes? Like someone's got a tourniquet on your arm and it makes it feel tingly and weak?
Look, it did initially, but I have seen a specialist and he told me if I have another block, and he said, to be quite honest with you, it's just like having a sugar hit. It might initially seem all right, but it's just going to go back to the way it was.
Have you thought about nicking it, like getting it severed?
What?
Yeah.
What?
You can do that.
I'm not sure about this.
No, you can.
What?
Your doctors can talk. You can talk to you. I don't know. It's like reflex sympathetic dystrophy. Did he say that eventually it'll right itself?
Oh, he said, how long's a piece of string?
Yeah. Right, yeah. I mean, you just have to keep talking to your specialist, Dave. There's not much else we can say.
Thanks for your call, Dave. Good luck with that. I will point out that neither of us are medical professionals and taking wild guesses at crap we probably shouldn't. Let's go to Peter in line 9, who's in Preston. G'day, Peter.
Yeah, g'day, guys. Just to listen to your discussion about whether you do or don't want to know about the future.
Oh, yeah, genetic kind of profiling or whatever. What are your thoughts?
Well, a couple of factors. One is I strongly believe in a lot of psychology, so what you believe is what will come true.
Yep.
So if you know that you've got a good chance of getting something, there's a good chance you will get it because you'll subconsciously program yourself that way.
Yep.
There's books like The Placebo Effect and all sorts of things like that, so you can't underestimate the power of the mind.
Yep.
And another big part is, you talk about genetics, a lot of it, I think, is about to do about environment, which comes down to your diet as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a friend who's a biochemist who reckons that 90% of cancer is preventable. And he does a lot of talks on that. He used to be a biochemist and he gave up because he thought he tried to get into prevention rather than the cure. But that's obviously a hard sell in this modern era.
Yeah. Well, that's one of those kind of numbers that you go, yeah, I don't, how on earth would you possibly ascertain that? But I agree with you, Peter, in that I think that there are a lot of things that influence one way or the other the likelihood of us developing disease or a certain disease developing. But it's, I don't know about the finding out about your genetics, no. About whether or not you're predisposed to get this when you're 70, 75-ish or... I kind of think no. I'm like you in that I think maybe it's a boy thing. But I think I'm just going to maximize. I'm going to sleep as well as I can, eat as well, move my body, try to stay as, you know, stress-free as possible, create a healthy lifestyle, and then, you know, whatever will happen will happen.
The other thing is, you know, the medical industry, the medical fraternity, and I'm involved in this, is really fixated now. And as we become an aging society, it becomes a very philosophical question. And that is, do we want to keep people alive for as long as possible? Now, here's an example.
That's a good point. You know, it's a good question.
You know, I listened to a guy give a talk a couple of years ago who's a diabetologist, and it was really illuminating because what he was saying is if you're 70 years old and you have insulin resistance, which is pre-diabetes, should we put you on a raft of drugs that's going to control your blood glucose but may have all of these other side effects that are going to mean that, you know, your quality of life. Here's an example. People that go on statins to control cholesterol. Statins have a lot. I'm not saying statins are bad. For a lot of people, statins are obligatory drugs to take. But if you're 70, 75, 80 years old and you're borderline hypercholesterolemic, you know, and there's not even a clear relationship, like a really clear relationship at 80 years old between cholesterol, total cholesterol, and heart disease, I mean, do you really want to go on statins at 80?
See, but the problem with this is the vast majority of the people who are listening to this show and the vast majority of the general population are not you. They don't have your knowledge. They don't think.
I understand that.
So what they do is, like my mum and dad, bless them, Ron's 76. Yeah. Ron's 76, my old man. He's got diabetes, right?
Yeah.
If you said to him, Ron, just explain to me, God, I hope he's not listening, explain to me what diabetes is. He wouldn't be able to.
Sure.
He wouldn't be able to. All he knows is he's got to prick his finger each morning, get a number, put it in a book, da-da-da-da-da, follow this protocol. And I think one of the challenges for us is that intelligent, qualified, researched people go, okay, so carbs are going to kill you. And then the next day someone goes, no, that's rubbish, you absolutely need carbs. And then someone else goes, no, we've actually found the blood typing diet, so you really need to eat according to your blood type. No, there's this new paleolithic thing. You go, oh my God.
Yeah, no, it's very difficult.
And then, you know, they listen to us and get more confused. Let's go to a break, 17 minutes to 11. We're going to try and deconfuse ourselves. When we come back, we're going to talk about how to, if you're heading towards falling off the wagon, how you might stay on it.
On 1116 SEN, The Science of Sport with Craig Harper, Jackie Larder and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sport. It's 10:45. Mark Fabreau, Craig Harper, Jackie Louder is away this week. Got a call. If you want to give us a buzz, talk about anything, health, wellness, training, all those things, food, medicine, we don't know it, we'll make it up. 94291116. Let's go to Sam in Brunswick. G'day, Sam.
Good morning, gents. I just wanted to talk about losing muscle mass.
That is. I saw Jackie typing that up on the screen, and I said, "Is she having an aneurysm and typing something incorrectly, or why do you want to?" I don't know that in 10, 11 years of
I want to lose it too.
Of you are not qualified to talk about this.
I'm not.
That anyone has ever rung me up and said, "How do I lose muscle?" Go on, Sam. Why do you want to do that?
Look, I'm quite short. And yeah. I put on size quite easily. Yeah. About 15% body fat.
Yeah.
But my upper body's quite massive.
How tall are you?
I'm 173 centimetres.
So what's that, like 5'6"?
I think so, yeah.
And what do you weigh?
I am 83 kilos.
Dude, you're jacked.
not really. I just don't like, I like the more athletic look, but I don't want to stop doing weights.
Okay. All right. Well,
I want to keep going to the gym, but I want to.
All right. Okay. Yeah. So here's what I'm going to tell you. One, I wish you didn't want to lose muscle, but it's not my body, it's yours. So if you said, what do you think I should do? I'd say just keep the muscle tiger and drop a little bit of body fat. You'll look like a god. But anyway, that's not what you want to do. So I'm going to say to you, instead of doing super heavy weights and low kind of more hypertrophy or power kind of stuff, just back off the weight, the actual weights of the movements that you're doing, and do higher reps. So look, there are lots of ways to do this, but I would probably do, you know, so if you're doing bench press or if you're doing lat pulls or you're doing leg press, up your reps to 20 to even 40 and make it more circuit-based training. So for example, you might do do you know what a giant set is, Sam? So a giant set, can we turn up? There we go. So a giant set is when you do, say, 3, 4, 5 exercises in a row. So let's say, for example, you might do leg press, bench press, chin-ups, and a back extension. Then you're back to the start where you've just done 4 exercises in a row. Keep the reps reasonably high, the weight pretty light to moderate,
yep,
and have not too much rest in between. The other thing that you can do where you'll absolutely lose muscle is just run a couple of times a week. Keep doing exactly what you get doing. And do you do any running right now?
No, I've got a hip and back issue, so I don't
okay.
really
All right.
like the impact.
Yeah, we'll just do some cardio, mate. So in the gym, and one thing that really, I tell you who has really good bodies, typically men and women who participate in rowing. So. Yeah. If you want to jump on a rower, what I love about, I personally hate the rower, but it hurts, but it is probably the single best, if we're just talking about something that's functional and strengthens your entire body with no impact and gives you a great cardio benefit, and you can do endurance stuff, interval stuff, jump on a rower a couple of times a week. But there's a couple of ideas for you. Thanks for your call, mate. Let's go to Josh, who is in Sunbury. G'day, Josh. No.
Josh?
G'day, Josh. Josh wants to find out something about running, I think. G'day, Josh.
How are we, boys?
We're good, man.
So just quickly, so I'll just tell you my physique first. So I've lost about 18 kilos. I'm 188 centimetres and I weigh about close enough to about 98 kilos.
Yep.
I'm running every week, like 6K, 3-4 times a week, doing swimming, all that stuff. Everyone tells me, you know, you don't need to lose any more. But to see 98 still on the scales, and I'm trying everything, eating healthy, drinking plenty of water, no soft drink, no takeaway foods, and I just can't lose anymore at all.
I wouldn't obsess about a number at all. I would, even with me, I don't know, most of the time I don't know what I weigh. But let me ask you, when you take your shirt off and you have a look in the mirror, what do you see?
Well, it's a lot better than it was, but there still is fat, and to me it looks like I don't know what they call it, the excess skin or whatever they call it. So yeah, I notice, everyone else notices the differences more than I do, so yeah, but I haven't been doing weights or anything. So
Josh, can I just make one suggestion? I mean, there's a saying, you can't outrun a bad diet, and you have said your diet is good, but sometimes our perception of what's good and what really is good is difficult, because there's so many things to understand. My one suggestion is, if you really want to lose a little bit more weight, go and see a dietitian, seriously. Just see them once and they can then analyze your diet. And if you make subtle changes to that, Because it could be not the volume of food you're eating. It could be what, and you might think that it's good food, but if it's, if, for example, you're having carbohydrate that's high glycemic index, that's going to mean you're going to have oscillations in your blood glucose, and that's going to be bad for your general physiology. So my one suggestion would be to go and just have a chat to a dietitian.
Okay, lovely. The only thing with that is my partner is a dietitian.
there goes that theory.
The lean chicken, the salmon, the veggies, all that jazz. And it's just not happening. So
how old are you, Josh?
22.
And have you had a blood test just to see what's happening hormonally?
I've had all that, yeah, and everything's fine. So I had that done not too long ago, maybe about 3 or 4 months ago, and everything was as normal.
All right, so my last suggestion for you is this. So let's say you're going to do 4 or 5 cardio things a week.
Yep.
Do 4 or 5 different things. So okay. don't do the same thing. And also don't do the same volume. So some days do 15 minutes where you're absolutely flogging yourself, and some days do 90 minutes where it's steady state. So just vary it. Vary the – because what happens is some people's body adapts quite quickly and then pretty much just hits homeostasis. So you kind of become fit for what you do. So, for example, if Mark and I go out on the bike today, he will – well, if he doesn't have a dodgy hamstring, but typically he will kill me. He'll annihilate me. An hour into it, I'll be dying and he'll be fresh because he's conditioned to that. Conversely, if we went to the gym and we did a weight session, it's going to be the other way around.
That'd
so really my bottom line for you is just vary it, do as much different stuff as you can, try not to get into a rhythm. Thanks for your call. Just quickly for you, Mark, 39-year-old female, one of our listeners. Thanks, guys. Love the segment. She wants to know where she can get her genome sequenced or checked out or whatever it is. And a couple of other people have said that as well.
I think the first thing you can do is just go to your GP and talk to your GP. But your GP should be able to tell you, because there's a lot of places where you can do it now. Mm. And there is a lot around medical ethics and actually you have all of this has to go through what's called a genetic counselor, so it has to be done through the correct channels. You can't just do a mail order thing. That wouldn't be good.
Just quickly, hi guys, I have a friend, David Jennings, bomber, who would right now is running at Coburg Athletics Oval in a 6-hour race to raise money for Will Murray. People have donated whatever amount they want. For any K's done over 60, I thought it was worth a mention. We thought it was worth a mention too, Paul. Thanks for that. And just quickly, Peter in Cheltenham. Chicory is very good for the following: blood pressure, cholesterol, high cholesterol, and problems going to the toilet. There you go. So if you have trouble backing one out, a little bit of chicory perhaps. We're going to take a quick break. Come back after this.
On 11.16 SEN, The Science of Sport with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's Home of Sport. We're nearly done and dusted. A bunch of people have sent through messages. A couple of people come through on the phones that we can't deal with. Please contact us next week, first thing, and we'll deal with all of those questions straight up.
So, Craig, just to finish up, we talked a little bit before about how we can stay on the exercise bandwagon. Mm. And I think it's important. So in the little bit of time we got left, given that you've had a multitude of clients and you have vast experience in this, what are some of the things you can tell our listeners to stay on the exercise bandwagon if something goes a little awry?
Well, here's the thing. I think you need to be fully aware and expectant of the fact that you're going to go through peaks and troughs of motivation. So when you can't be bothered, in inverted commas, welcome to life, welcome to being human. That's not weakness, that's being normal, right? Mm-hmm. So we beat ourselves up. We go, oh, I can't be stuffed, I'm crap, I'm rubbish. No, you're not, you're just normal. But the challenge is to be proactive and productive when you can't be bothered, right?
Yeah.
So how do we do that? So de-emotionalize the process as much as possible. So if, for example, I've just got to rely on myself to crawl out of bed and go for a run, I'm not going to do it, perhaps, if I'm a lot of people. But if I'm meeting Mark 5 days a week and we're doing 5Ks every morning for the next 10 weeks because we're doing this program, all of a sudden I've got structure and accountability and I don't want to let someone down. So even though, so though I don't feel like it, I get up and I do it because my buddy's waiting out the front of my joint
buddy
going,
up is good.
What are you doing, idiot face? Hurry up. I've got stuff to do, right? So have a training partner. Use perhaps a personal trainer or an exercise physiologist. Have structure. Have accountability. Keep a diary. Do regular assessments. Train for an event. Become part of a sporting team where once or twice a week you play with some mates. Doesn't matter what the level is. Just being active, being connected and having fun. Lots of things that you can do to make sure that even when you don't feel like it, in inverted commas, you keep doing it. Coming up after 11 o'clock, BP and Paul Aitken live from Kooyong. Final day of the action between the US and Australia, of course. And you, big boy, I'll see you
in 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Beautiful, guru. See you
Enjoy, folks. Thanks,
Mikey.
Thanks, Jack.
Bye.